So welcome everybody to Happy Hour at our Buddhist Centre. And I like calling it something like that, even though it's over an hour and a quarter at least. But nevertheless, calling it Happy Hour. When I was in Hong Kong just last week, telling many people that one of the gentlemen who took me to a retreat centre over in New South Wales many years ago, he was driving me from the airport to the centre. He used to call the hall of the meditation centre the torture room. I said, what are you calling it that for? Because he thought in those days he had to sit up straight, he had to be peaceful, he couldn't move any of his legs or anything once he started sitting down. And sometimes it was very painful for him. Sometimes it was really difficult. And often the meditation would go on too long, or sometimes the meditation would go on too short, and he wasn't having a peaceful, happy time. And because of that, he just, every time he went into the meditation center, he was saying he was going into the torture chamber. And I thought, what a stupid idea. When I go into a meditation room, even if I have to give a talk or whatever I have to do, I never call it a torture chamber. I call it the entertainment center. Because it's a happy thing to meditate. So much so that even when I was teaching a retreat in Hong Kong about a week ago, I told everybody that we call this, in my tradition, Club Med Hong Kong. Actually, it was in Sha Tin, which was one of the northern kind of parts of Hong Kong. Sha Tin Club Med. And that was accurate. Because when you go to Club Med, why do you go to a place like Club Med? It's like a holiday, a resort, a place you can go to for some peace and quiet and benefit, to relax. So once you give this meditation time a good name, once you start to think it's going to be some fun, it's amazing just how that instructs the meditation. You actually tend to go towards the fun and the peace and the joy of meditation. And once you start to do that, the meditation takes off. I was also talking about this to a few people that I still to this day remember the first time I sat down to do some meditation, which was in 1969. How many years ago is that? 55? 55 years ago. It was only for 5 minutes. And I remembered that. It was just, it feels good, it's peaceful, it's relaxing, and it was a lot of, only a tiny bit of happiness, but it really felt good. And it caught me the very first time I did some meditation. And hopefully that every one of you can feel the same. That this is a beautiful, peaceful, joyful thing to do. Why don't you actually start looking for the joy? What happens if things don't go as peaceful as they usually should? Sometimes you realize that, well, something's going on wrong here. You're not sort of allowing the body to become still and the mind to become still. And that means it's not joyful, and yet the mind doesn't engage with this process of peace and stillness. And it's an important thing to keep in mind. I know that sometimes some part of the meditation is watching your breathing, but it's much better to watch the peace and the joy. And after a while you'll find out, yeah, the breath is peaceful and joyful. Different things become peaceful and joyful in the meditation. But the thing which may be the most important is the sheer joy of it. Even, I've been away for 3 weeks. Even just watching the body, doing a body scan and relaxing that body. After a while, just my body feels just so like delightful. It's relaxed, it's rested, it's at peace, and it feels good. And I notice that feeling good is something quite important. Why is it that my body feels probably the best when I start doing the meditation? It feels really nice. Why? And it's because that a lot of the joy, when it comes from the mind, is like an absence of burdens, even actually coming into the present moment. Sometimes, you know, what is the present moment? You know, it's an important part of the meditation. It's not the whole of the meditation, but an important stage of the meditation. And what happens is, you know, the past and the future are like burdens, and you're letting go of those burdens. And because I've just been traveling, you sometimes you see people with all these heavy suitcases, and you can see them struggling to carry them. And some of them are really heavy. As for me, this is my carry-on baggage and check-in baggage, the whole thing. It's really nice being a monk. You don't have to have too much stuff. So whenever I go through the customs, they always ask me, "Where's your baggage?" It's okay in Perth Airport because they know me. And over here, so this is it. And that's true. Anyone who's met me at the airport, this is all you carry. But anyway, because it's nice and light. I'm not a lazy monk. I'm a monk who knows, why do you carry so much stuff? When you only carry a small amount of stuff, life is much easier. That's like the past and the future. The past to me is this really heavy burden, which is not necessary, especially not during meditation. And the future is another heavy burden, which ain't necessary, especially during meditation. When you let those two heavy burdens down, and you feel safe about putting them down, you feel light. It feels good. You feel just more easy to be peaceful. During your meditations, if there is something bothering you, what is actually bothering you? It's nearly always something to do with the past or something to do with the future. In this present moment, it's really easy to, well, it's here. And when you relax with it, of course it gets more easy. As it gets more easy, there's nothing much to worry about. When there's nothing much to worry about, it means your burdens in your mind get less and less and less. And that is one of the reasons for joy coming up. You feel free. You don't have to carry things around. So you don't get so tired in your life. Now, because I do go traveling, and sometimes you do sort of have jet lags, and just even traveling is very tiring. And sometimes that when you feel tired, I notice it's more difficult, you know, to be, you know, sharp and bright and full of energy. It still can be done, you know how to do it eventually. But nevertheless, I can understand why when people are tired, worn out, it's much harder to be peaceful in meditation. But if you can learn how to relax, be at peace, have no worries at all about past or future, come in this moment and just enjoy being here. And it's once you are here, not being so concerned of what this is like being here, but your relationship to what is happening right now, making peace with it, being kind, being gentle, then you find that it's much easier to get this happiness in meditation. That happiness, eventually, the mind wants to stay there. You don't force the mind to meditate. You let the mind meditate. It's a natural process. And then the mind does become really peaceful all by itself. And people get surprised how easy it is to meditate. When I say easy to meditate, you don't put forth any effort or will. All that effort or will just kind of gets vanished, disappears. You're just sitting here, just enjoying this moment. As I told many people, over in a place like Hong Kong, they don't watch like AFL like they do in Australia. They watch like soccer. And I said, when you watch a soccer match, how long does it last for? And I think it's about an hour and a hour, yeah. No, it was an hour and a half, I think. But anyway, do you have to force yourself to watch the soccer match? Do you have to say, I've got to watch the soccer match and I must not move, I must concentrate, concentrate, concentrate? You don't have to concentrate. It satisfies your mind, gives enjoyment. And sometimes, you may have seen this when somebody's watching a movie or watching a sports match they really like. A lot of time, you find it may be your husband. You say, darling, it's time for dinner. And they're not ignoring you. They just can't hear you. They're focused on the football match. Or your wife may be watching a movie. They're focused on the movie. They just can't hear you. When you say, look, the dinner, this evening's dinner, it's smoking in the oven, it's burning, there's flames coming out. I'm exaggerating, but they can't hear you. Because what they're focused on, what is actually drawing their mind in to that movie, it's just they're really enjoying it. It's the same with meditation. You get so peaceful that it becomes joyful, and you don't have to force the mind to stay there. It becomes a natural place of really deep relaxation, and the body and the mind just refuses to move. It's having some peace. So that's how our meditation works. And hopefully each one of you can understand that. After a while you're sitting in, it becomes peaceful and still and joyful. Why would you want to move? And the most peaceful, joyful meditations you experience, hopefully you notice you never made that happen. You let it happen. Allowed it to grow deeper and deeper and deeper until it became very, very still. And the stillness has a natural feeling of joy and peace and ease. Just like you'll hear me talk about in the meditation, the peace, and from the peace, the stillness of mind. In the stillness, it's just hardly any thoughts happen. You don't need to describe anything. You just know without giving things a name. And that silent awareness becomes so beautiful. And you get surprised at how wonderful everything starts to feel when you don't keep giving it names and judging it and putting it into boxes and categories. So this is how the meditation works. And my job is not just to talk about it for you, but to lead you into it. So it becomes so peaceful, so still, and you realize that what I'm saying is perfectly correct. And this is the way to have some very peaceful and easy and joyful meditations. So now, I'm going to start in a few moments. I should announce, as always, if there's anybody here come for the introduction to meditation, that class is being held in the room to my right. I was just talking to the teacher, Ronnie, earlier, and she said she only had 4 people going in there today so far. Hopefully she's got some more by now. So if any of you out of compassion wish to go and see poor Ronnie. Anyway, no, if this is where you think you belong, great. The only difference is in the intro to meditation, we usually just do like shorter meditations. Here we do a meditation for 45 minutes. So hopefully you can do that without any problem. So let's get started. So wherever you are sitting right now, in a chair, on a cushion, wherever it is, make sure you're reasonably comfortable, and then we can begin the meditation class. The first thing to do, as usual, is just close your eyes. And with your eyes closed, see if you can become aware of your bodily posture, how you're sitting, what position is your body in right now. This awareness of the body is not a difficult thing to do. And because I'm moving from the bottom of the body slowly upwards to the top of the body, it does mean there's some different sensations and things to see. It makes it more interesting at the beginning of the meditation to get your awareness and another quality called kindness settled. It takes a while to turn the mind away from the world and into something much more subtle, just like the feeling in your own body and how to relax it and eventually how to become peaceful in your mind. But we start with just our body, and I encourage everybody to actually start with the very bottom of your body, your toes. So in order to do this, you ask your toes, how are you? You know, you're supposed to be in a connection with your body, able to feel it, to know how it is. So now you ask your toes, how are you? And as soon as you do that, awareness of your toes start to develop. You begin to know the feelings and sensations in your own toes. And those feelings and sensations can let you know whether your toes are comfortable. If they're not, like my toe on my right foot, it's a bit too squashed, so I move it. That feels better. And I do that because it's not just being aware of something, it's actually responding to how you can make the body more comfortable. It's called care. So I now care for my feet, can feel my toes, and they're much better now. And I start to become aware of up my feet, you know, to my soles of my feet, and the uppers, the skin, anything which I can perceive in the area of my feet, I'll become aware of, even the heels of my feet as well. And once I'm aware of those feelings, I'm kind to them. Of all the years I've been doing this, I know how to relax my feet. And it's not by adjusting their position, just by giving them kindness and letting them, the only way to describe it is like expand, release any tightness, undo any tension, loosen anything which is being stretched, releasing any part which is being squashed, so the whole of each feet feel like they're not being pushed or stretched, they can relax. It's like soaking your feet in a hot bath. So there's no pressure on your feet or no tension on them. They become nice and loose and at ease. These are metaphors for the state of relaxation kindfulness can produce in your own feet. And once my feet are as relaxed as I can possibly make them, then I move up to my ankles. Many people sprain their ankles, injure their ankles. Maybe you haven't sprained them or injured them for a while, but there may still be some damage there. Sometimes you've fallen over, fallen off a motorbike or off a ladder. So now you can feel those ankles. And you can relax all the parts of those two ankles. Exactly what I'm doing now. And you can sometimes be surprised at how much you can feel in that part of your body. How sensitive that part of the body becomes. And how delightful it can feel once it's fully relaxed. So you move the attention further up the lower legs, the calves, those big muscles on the back of each leg, the skin, and anything else you can perceive below your knee, above your ankles. That's what I'm perceiving now. And I just give it this kindness, which allows all those skin and muscles and ligaments, even bones, in my lower legs to relax to the max. I can honestly feel them relaxing. I sometimes imagine that they're sinking deeper and deeper and deeper into the cushion. And don't restrict them. I don't stop them. I let them choose how deeply they can relax. I trust them. And that often leads to a deeper sense of peace. When they don't have to perform any task or live up to any expectation. These are all metaphors. They succeed in relaxing my lower legs deeper than I thought possible. And I go to my knees. Another time you injure your knees, and that feeling of injury, if you fall over or hit them, is very specific to your knees. Every part of the body has its own specific sensations or feelings. After a while you can get to know that. You also get to know how to relax all parts of your body one by one. That's what I'm doing now to my knees. I'm imagining that sometimes little channels of energy can get blocked. If I feel that something happening there, like an ache or a pain, I can release that blockage, just imagining things expanding. Loosening, the inflammation just gets uninflamed. There's more space down there, nothing is being squashed or stretched. And those imaginations are what make my knees feel just really loose, open, and no stress on them at all. When I think that they are relaxed enough, that's when I go upwards to my lower, to my thighs. For those who, if you had your eyes open, you'd have seen me picking my nose. It was very itchy a moment ago. And I'm kind enough to all parts of my body to deal with it. But anyway, now I'm back on my thighs. Again, making sure they feel loose and at ease. A lot of the tightness and stress in the body is caused by your mind not knowing how to let go. Now you actually experiment and you find it's not that hard to loosen up So your whole thighs feel that they are free from you telling them what to do. They become nice and loose and peaceful all by themselves. And go further to my buttocks. These muscles which are now being pressed against the cushion on which I'm sitting. My job is to make sure that that feeling is kind of even. And for once it's not. It's too much pressure on my left buttock, not my right, so I'm just going to slightly move. Oh wow, no, it's too much on the right. Ah, there we are. I don't mind spending a little bit of time doing this because I know the response is the body feels cared for and then it gets relaxed and loose and peaceful. So now I move from my buttocks to my waist to find the best position for your waist. For me, it's just always stretching my back. You find what's most comfortable for you. It's okay to experiment, trial and error. Move it this way, move it that way, until you find the optimum position for your waist. And then I, inch by inch, scan my body from the bottom of the torso to the top. Go through my digestive tract first of all. Just scanning it. Going further and further upwards. And as I scan my torso, if I come across any place which is tense or sore, I would pause there and find out what's going on. Because as a monk, the way of our clothing, we wear belts. My belt was actually a bit tight, but I just moved it slightly and it feels so much better. This is just like when you're on an aircraft and you're taking off on the flight, you have to check all of the dials to make sure everything is in order. That's what I do with my own body when I want to go into a deep meditation. Check that everything is okay. Now, I know now when it feels much better. As I go up my body, if there's any place, I'm being honest, I hope I don't bore you, but just before I came in here, somebody gave me a chocolate Easter rabbit, and I think I ate half of it before coming in here, so I can actually kind of feel that digesting. It's not unpleasant. But I relax my whole digestive system. I trust it. And that evens any feeling in my digestive tract. And I keep being aware of that, scanning upwards till I come to my stomach. I think that's where most of that chocolate Easter bunny is. My stomach doesn't feel like it usually feels on a 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Still comfortable, but I know there's something there. So I keep moving up to get to my lungs. And just relax my lungs. I trust them to breathe in as much as they need, to breathe out as they need. I don't force or criticize. I'm kind. And that eases up the whole process of breathing. It allows me to move further up to my heart region. If there's any tightness or tension there, I'll just be kind to it. Imagine I'm just stroking it, easing it, making peace with it. And everything relaxes. Now move further up my body to my shoulders. Oh goodness, they're tight. So I'm now going to relax those shoulders. And as they relax, there's many ways I do that. But one of the ways is just imagining those shoulders are just two bunches of threads on either side of the spine, and they're being stretched. And I imagine that little invisible demons are stretching them. I allow them to let go on both ends. So those muscles become loose, at ease, no tightness on them anymore. And they feel relaxed now. So much more pleasurable than a few moments ago when I first looked at them. And that allows me to leave them alone and go down my arms. The upper arms are usually very little problems. But still I look to make sure I don't miss anything. I can feel the muscles in my upper arms. Until I can go down to my elbows. They seem to be at ease. Go down to my lower arms, forearms I think they're called, to my wrists, the palms of my hands, and then the fingers of my hands. How do your fingers feel right now? That's a question I ask my fingers. They're not in the perfect meditation posture, but they're good enough. No need to move them. And I've relaxed both of my arms, including the hands. So I go back up to my neck. I often notice, it really depends on just how my head is balanced on top of the neck. If it's too far to the left or too far to the right, it will cause some tightness and tension, which might cause an ache or a pain later. Same if it's too far forward or too far back. But for me, too far to the left or too far to the right is more sensitive, so I make sure that is okay first. And then find the optimum position for my head, too high up, too far to the back, then it's going to wake. Too far forward, and it usually sends me to sleep. So I want to find just the right position. And once you can feel that, then you can leave those neck muscles alone. And lastly, as you know, I start to experience the sensations around my eyes, my nose, or my mouth. After a while you can feel these sensations, experiences there. And the ones I'm looking out for, if they're tight, stretched, or squashed, I want them to be loose and relaxed. And soon you get to know the feelings in your face and how to relax them. When you do relax them, the cause of that tightness in your face, the anger, the fear, the negativity that's seen, and you can uncause that tightness. Just relax. And by doing that, you find things like fear or anger, jealousy, depression, the feelings that creates in your face get dispelled. And your face relaxes. And having done that, I become aware of my whole body, from toes to face, relaxed to the max. If I find I've missed any point, I will address that. But even now, my body is so relaxed, that's how it feels, honestly. You start to get the feeling of pleasure, delight, of relaxation. My body feels good. The kindness has worked. And I know with a body this relaxed, that when I go deep in my meditation, the body won't disturb me. I can focus on my mind, and my body will just drift off into the background. So that's what I do. To start with, I focus on peace. How peaceful is my mind? What makes it more peaceful? As I explained earlier, just not being concerned with the past, just one heavy suitcase which one keeps carrying around with you. And certainly in meditation you can put that down. Put it down on the ground. It's safe. The suitcase with all of your plans and fears and anxieties of the future. You put that down too. Take a rest, a break from the past and the future. So you get to know what the present moment feels like. And the present moment is a place of freedom, of being free of all burdens. You're just here. It's like you've arrived. You're not trying to get rid of anything. If you are, you just lost the present moment. You're not trying to get anything. Again, getting something is about the future. Just being here, really being here, means you're free of so much burden and tension, which stops you enjoying the meditation. And you can feel what peace is like. You're experiencing it for yourself. The peace has many levels. Hopefully the peace is growing deeper and stronger, more beautiful, more delightful. When that peace gets delightful enough, automatically, you won't want to give names to anything, to think, to say. It's where the silence takes over. Later on in the silence, things like breath, things like nimittas, and deeper meditations, they come up naturally. And they're powerful and safe. But now again, my mind just does not want to say anything. It's getting silent. So I'll be quiet now. When I speak again, it'll be close to the end of the meditation. So it is getting close now to the end of this meditation period. How do you feel? How peaceful are you? And what is peaceful, the experience of peaceful, feel like? How delightful is it? As you start to slowly come out from your meditation, how does your body feel? What does being relaxed feel like? I will now open, I will now ring the gong 3 times. When the gong starts sounding for the 3rd time, it's a sign to come out from the meditation. There we go. It's 45 minutes of meditation. And usually it's not good anyway to try and think up questions when the mind is nice and quiet. So we have some meditations, some questions from overseas. Good, yes. First question. I've observed that allowing my mind to wander off sometimes during breath meditation results in myself being less irritated when the meditation finishes. In fact, it feels more peaceful at the end rather than when I try to enforce anything. My question is, could this become a bad habit for my mind that I keep encouraging this to happen during meditation? I think the opposite is the case, that by allowing your mind to wander off sometimes, that you are being kind to your mind. The mind will come back again and stay with your the quietness, the peace, or the breath. When you force something, that creates a tightness and tension in the mind, which is not pleasant. So if you allow it to wander off, it comes back again. You're being kind to it. And then you find it doesn't want to go anywhere. It will stay put. So I think you've, you know, understood how this mind works. You don't force it, you don't control it, you let peace happen. And that's by far a more efficient and successful way to find peace in the mind. Next question from Indonesia. I sometimes still find it sleepy when meditating, although I have slept enough. And some other times the mind is too busy thinking. How do I separate them? You know, sometimes it's not whether you feel that you slept enough. It's just how the body feels. And sometimes we assume we've slept enough, but we haven't. And after a while, it's not just how much you slept, but also just other causes. I always find If it's too hot, the mind is never as clear at the beginning as when it's nice and cool. I found that out just in the early years in Thailand, sleep, sort of meditating in the forests, which were very humid and uncomfortable. That did cause me to be sleepy. And all that happened once was having to do visas in Bangkok. And I managed to be able to sit in the mornings in an air-conditioned room, and there was no sleepiness there at all. So sometimes there's many causes for sleepiness. But one thing is, please don't fight it. There's always some degree of mindfulness there when you're sleepy. Just like when somebody is drunk and trying to find their way home, they have enough mindfulness to get home. I don't know how, but they do. You always have a little bit of mindfulness, and if you just stay with that sleepiness and just understand it, and after a while the energy comes back to you, and you just wake up and have a very clear mind. And the mind is too busy thinking, that means you've lost the present moment. And you're off and just worrying about the future or the past. That's what one thinks about. And after a while you find it's much more pleasurable just to be in this moment, just to be here. And later on, if you've got some important decisions to make, make them after the meditation is finished, when the mind is peaceful, when the mind is clear and energized, then some of those problems are so easy to solve. Dear Ajahn Bhavan, the next question is from Sri Lanka. How to go beyond when you don't feel your breath during meditation? You can start by feeling your breath, but after a while the breath disappears. If you notice just the way how the Buddha taught breath meditation, that once you're aware of your breath, it gets very peaceful and very joyful. You're breathing in with some bliss coming up in your mind. And if that is how you meditate, the way the Buddha described it, that when the breath disappears, you're left with a feeling of joy. And that becomes your object of meditation. And it's a gorgeous, a beautiful meditation. So you don't always have to be with your breathing. The breathing is a vehicle, like a car which you use to get here. And then once you're here, you don't need to use your car anymore. Your breath brings you to that state, the five senses almost disappearing, and the mind is just becoming bright. Once you're at that stage, the brightness of the mind, its beauty, is all you need, and you go much further with that. So anyway, those are some answers to those questions. So now I ask, is there any other questions you would like to ask? Oh, good.
Ajahn Bhavan, we are letting go of our attachments.
Yes.
To pleasures, to some views of how things are or how we are. But many of those attachments, they provide a lot of strength and support in life.
Yes.
Attachments to family, to
yes.
friends, to some habits. So my question is, how can we deal with fear that there's nothing, eventually there's nothing to lean on, there's nothing to hold on to, there's nothing. How do we deal with that
fear now? How do you deal with that? It's kind of go a bit too far too quickly. When you say you have nothing to lean on, after a while there's no one to do the leaning. There's no one there, so it doesn't matter, there's no one to lean on. But that's going on a very deep journey into meditation. For the time being, instead of being afraid of something you haven't experienced yet, we just learn how to understand what attachments truly are and what joy really is. You don't let go of everything all at once. The first thing we do, what we're mostly doing in meditation, we're letting go of the five senses: seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching. And then we're getting into the sixth sense, the mind, and that becomes very beautiful, very energizing, and the mind becomes very clear. Our wanting and not wanting, restlessness and sleepiness and doubt all disappear. That's called the five hindrances. Your mind is much stronger and clearer. You might describe this as a way of knowing clearly. And once one has those stages, what one experiences and sees is much better than you could ever expect. You're actually experiencing the world in a way you've never seen before. The simile which I often give is the simile of the tadpole and the frog. If many of you have heard this before, a tadpole can never understand what water is. It, no matter how intelligent or mindful it is, it just doesn't have the data. It can't know what water is, no more than a fish can understand what water is. But then eventually the tadpole grows little appendages, legs and arms, and the tadpole becomes a frog, and the frog jumps outside of the water onto dry land. It's the first time it's ever experienced that, and that gives it a much greater perspective of what these things are. When you have the deeper perspectives, the questions on leaning on things, you know, how to practice with your children, your partner, your job and other family members and things which you love and care for, you practice with them in a much more beautiful, effective way. You don't get so upset. Sometimes people think it's attachment to family, and sometimes it's not really attachment, it's like fear of losing control. And after a while one realizes you don't have to be afraid. And you find out that the control is not necessary. You have a much more beautiful, peaceful life. So life becomes better, never worse. And this is where you see this, because your wisdom grows. You understand more after you've experienced those very deep meditations. What I'm talking about here is, you know, the things like the jhanas, the nimittas, you know, which come up in your mind. Your mind becomes strong, strengthened, and what you thought this was what was really happening, you find the world is much more than that. You really start to get wisdom, but not what other people tell you, is what you see with a much more bright, clear mind. Does that make any sense to you? It's mostly meditation is training on how to know for yourself clearly. Just, you know, when you're restless, you're just too tired to see clearly. When you're dull and sleepy, again, you don't see very clearly. When you want something, you see what you want to see. When there's any ill will there, negativity, you deny too much. And when these things are in operation, you cannot see what's really happening. To find truth, that's why we need to train our mind. And we know it's working because we get all this incredible, peaceful, joyful clarity of our mind. So those are the things we should kind of aim for first of all. And then when you have that clarity, then you can actually trust for your experience. I know that sometimes because I teach deeper in meditation on these talks, even things like rebirth, so many people say, oh, just what's the proof of rebirth? It's not like proof from getting evidence outside of yourself. It's just when the mind becomes really still and peaceful, you can see things. And they're true. You know they're true. The fifth of those nirvanas, hindrances to your cognitive processes, what distorts the mind is doubt. And the weird thing about when you have a deep meditation, your sense of doubt disappears. You know what's happening. You can see clearly. And that's more important than whatever I say. You can actually see for yourself what's happening. Does that make sense again? That's one of the lovely sayings of the Buddha. You know, from the stillness of meditation, from there you can see things as they truly are. A simple simile is a simile of the lake up in the mountains. When the lake is still, there's no waves on the surface of that lake because there's no wind, it's a windless evening. When that lake is perfectly still and you sort of stand looking into that lake, then you can see the perfect reflection of the moon and the stars in the heavens above. If there's any movement in that lake, it distorts the image. You get a sort of not what's really a good reflection. The water has to be perfectly still to act as a mirror. That's like your mind has to be perfectly still to be able to see what's really going on. That's why, you know, meditation, the stillness, is the most important part of Buddhism, I would say. Any other questions? Comments? Complaints? Okay, so it's 4:15 now, this is the time it's supposed to end. So I will now do the bowing to the Buddha. And then if you wish to ask any questions afterwards, I'll still be sitting down here for a few more minutes.